Hey everybody, before we get into the show, I do want to let you know that we have another live show coming up Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. at Maya Cinemas in North Las Vegas. We are going to be talking about the vampire ballerina horror comedy Abigail. This movie looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And joining me to talk about it are my wife, Gina Mazzoni, film student Perry Markle, and filmmaker and Sin City Horror Club founder Nick Woods. It's going to be a great time, great conversation. There's an enter to win contest going on right now on my website, piecingpod.com. You can find a link in the show notes. Enter to win some tickets. And otherwise, tickets are available from Maya Cinemas. And I hope to see you there on Thursday, April 18th at 6 p.m. Welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're talking about a film called Our Friend. It came out just a couple weeks ago, starring Casey Affleck, Jason Segel, and Dakota Johnson. And it is a real tearjerker, but we had a good time talking about it, though. It's out now, like I said, on VOD. And with me to talk about it is Josh from Merc with a Movie blog, his first time on the show. So I'm very happy to have him on the show. We have a great conversation for you guys. And before we get into it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. If you're enjoying the show, we really do appreciate your reviews. Just had a couple of great new reviews the last week, and just know I very much appreciate that whenever you guys do that. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all of the movies we talk about here on the show. So with that said, let's get into this conversation about Our Friend. All right, so joining us today on the show, we've got Josh from Merc with a Movie blog. Josh, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. I'm excited to talk some movies.
Yeah, this is gonna be fun. Unlike the movie, which is very sad, but we're gonna have some fun.
Sounds good.
Before we get into this movie, Our Friend, why don't you tell people a little bit about you and what you do?
Well, I run a website called Merc with Movie Blog, where I do movie reviews, movie news, stuff like that. We have some podcasts over there. We do a bunch of different stuff. We do like we have a Mandalorian review show. We have a Bachelor Nation show over there. Really weird. But people seem to like it. So we just started an MCU TV type of podcast. So we're covering WandaVision, and we'll be going into all the other shows from there. But I've been doing I've had it going since 2013. That's when I started writing reviews. I had my own website for there. I also run a site called DC Comics News as well, where I do stuff over there. So, yeah, just writing and editing. That seems to be my life lately.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's plenty to cover, and it sounds like you cover a lot of it.
That's so right.
that is good, man. That is good. Well, this movie, Our Friend, was this one that was it like on your radar, like heading up to the release?
No, I had gotten a screener from Film Independent, but I had never heard of it before. When it popped up to register for the screener, I saw that Jason Segel and Casey Affleck were in it. I was like, oh, okay, I'll check that out. Absolutely. And I was very pleasantly surprised. But I didn't know about it. I didn't know about the source behind it at all either. So it was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, that's kind of how I came to it as well. And I mean, my number one thing was like, oh, wow, Jason Segel. Where's he been? You know,
he doesn't do a lot of film. I know he's been doing a TV show.
Sure.
I don't remember what it's called, but apparently it's pretty weird.
I guess, you know, he really kind of blazed his way through the mid-2000s, like, really, it's so much stuff, and yeah. Some of it might even come up in some of our puzzle pieces here, but, and now he's just, I guess, picking and choosing what he wants to do, and this is an interesting role for him, and, of course, Casey Affleck is, I mean, he's great in everything. I mean, you know, we don't have to get into the questionableness of his character or anything like that. He's a fantastic actor, and this is another great role. And Dakota Johnson is in a really great role lately. I mean, everything she's been doing, I think, has been excellent, and this is definitely no different from a lot of what she's been up to. But yeah, we'll talk more about the movie along the way. What do you got for your first puzzle piece?
All right. So all of mine, I tried to kind of tie them to different parts of the movie, so, like, you know, they're not all about cancer or, you know, and stuff like that.
Sure.
But the first one that I'm gonna talk about is and that is 50-50, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie. I had just seen this movie for the first time, like, maybe 3 months ago, and I really liked it. A lot of people had been talking it up for me, and I was like, well, okay, I should get around to checking this out. And I really liked it. The reason that I put it on here specifically is, to me, it really kind of showcased the aspect of our friend where friendship is the thing that can help you through those tough times, even when you don't realize that you need it. And we see that in our friend, you know, where, you know, Matt, Casey Affleck's character, doesn't really a lot of times think that he needs the help, even though in the end he does, and he does realize it in the end. And you see that in 50-50 with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen's character. So I don't know. I really enjoyed that one quite a bit. So
no, that's a great first piece to start this thing out on. And I'm surprised I hadn't thought of it, because that's such a great movie. And, you know, of course, dealing with death, but also dealing with friendship and that whole thing of just needing somebody to kind of help you guide your way through everything that goes on at that point.
Yeah, it was the first movie that popped into my head when I was trying to think of what I would do. It was because I had just watched it so recently, but it was the first one that popped in.
Nice. So, and I think one other thing to using 50-50 and just, like, kind of jumping into the conversation about the movie, I think, to me, this movie, Our Friend, I'm very mixed on it. There's things about it I really liked, and there's things about it I don't like. You know, it's a little kind of, you know, cancer manipulative kind of stuff, you know, all that, you know, very emotional, like, not 100% earned, I don't know, but I wish that it did build up the friend element even more, which it is, it's kind of the hook of this movie that stops it from just being a movie about this family going through this horrible, horrible thing. And obviously this is based on a real memoir. And from what I understand, I read a couple of reviews of the movie that talk about the, you know, the book itself. I understand it's even more gut-wrenching, the book, and they kind of lightened it a little bit, which is hard to imagine because it's already so damn sad.
Yeah.
But I think that, and again, I wouldn't, I feel like maybe I'd be complaining that they changed it too much if they did, but at the same time, I kind of wish they leaned into that friendship, because it's such an interesting topic to deal with, that, you know, having this person that just gets you through this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is something I would have liked to have seen more of, is just that dichotomy between these characters really being friends, as opposed to just, you know, trying to, I mean, obviously we see a lot of that. So, you know, we see a lot of, you know, them trying to help each other out, but it really just, it jumps into the hard parts right away, and we don't get to see as much of the building of that friendship, as much as I would have liked to have seen.
Absolutely. Well, I'll go for my first piece. I said Jason Segel will probably show up in some puzzle pieces. I might as well get this one out of the way first. And that is 2009's I Love You, Man. with Jason Segel and Paul Rudd. Obviously a much lighter film, but also about a sensitive guy who doesn't, you know, really do that good at making friends. And, you know, it's all about just how important it is, especially at this particular age in life when it starts to become a little bit harder to make really good friends, to really find one and connect and really hold on to that friendship, and how important that can be for a person. And Jason Segel, there's just something about him. He is just perfect for this kind of character.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I know I've seen this movie one time, and I remember enjoying it quite a bit. The thing that I always seem to remember is the him playing the bass.
Yes,
in that movie, that slapping the bass. I always remember that. My brother always quotes that to me.
That's the standout for sure.
Yeah, but it's definitely one that I think I would like to go back and rewatch, because I remember really enjoying it quite a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, I need to go back too, because it's come up on the show a bunch lately. So okay. I definitely need to go back and check it out again.
Yeah, definitely. If it keeps coming up, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of helps build my watch list. If a movie keeps coming up on this show, it's like I really owe it to myself and the listeners to go watch it again.
Yeah.
But what do you got next?
My next one is The Upside, with Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston. I'm going to say this right now. I've never seen the original, The Untouchables. So I don't know how it compares. I'm only going by this movie. So, you know, you guys out there are hating on The Upside, I'm sorry, because I actually enjoyed it.
Sure.
I chose this one because it kind of covers the importance of having friendship and having somebody there who can care for you when you can't care for yourself, and allowing yourself to kind of lean on others even when you don't necessarily want to. And I thought that The Upside showcases that beautifully throughout the film. I just rewatched it for this yesterday, and I think I liked it more going through it than I did the first time. Wow. It really, to me, seeing their friendship kind of bloom throughout. It's an odd couple pairing, and I really dug that. And Bryan Cranston is brilliant in this film, I thought. And Kevin Hart, I mean, he's doing Kevin Hart, but he's not as over the top as he usually is, which is what I think I like about it. Because most Kevin Hart things, he's just like really over the top. And in one, he gets a couple of those moments, but he reins it back, and I think it makes his performance a bit better than a lot of his others.
Right on. Yeah, I actually have not seen it. I certainly am aware of it, but I never got around to that movie. But those two can definitely be like so lovable on screen, you know, so I could totally picture how they would have a great chemistry between them. And based on the subject matter of the film, it's good to have that when you're dealing with such heavy topics, you know.
Absolutely. And it's like, this isn't like he's a quadriplegic, so it's not like he's dying of cancer, but the whole thing about it was, like I said, having that person who, because as you see in Our Friend, there comes a point where Nicole can no longer take care of herself, you know? And so Matt and Dane and the hospice nurse, and like, they have to be the ones to do that. And so it that part of it really kind of stuck out to me for it. And just like being able to have somebody that you can, like I said, that you can lean on, especially between Matt and Dane, that was a big part of this movie. So yeah, that was a big reason as to why I went to this one. I thought it was a little bit different for it, because it didn't quite, you know, wasn't quite the subject matter, but
sure.
Obviously, your first pick was very different. Yeah. I wasn't going that route. I didn't even think to go that route. So,
you never know which route you're going to end up going. And my pieces, to be honest, are all over the place. So
that's okay.
Yeah. So, speaking of which, my next one is the 2014 Michel Gondry, Charlie Kaufman film, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, mainly because of the way the story just jumps all over the place. And obviously here we're using that kind of mechanism for a different purpose. It's more for the, the crumbling state of this family and just how just how awful it all is. And I'm sure that for people going through something like that, you know, the days and the nights and the years even just kind of start blending together, and you know, trying to navigate all that just becomes all the more difficult, and figuring out where you are. And, you know, I believe the book took this approach as well, but certainly the director takes this approach with this movie to really jump around all over the place in the story. I mean, we're into the friends living with them, and then all of a sudden they're meeting the friends, and then all of a sudden she's been diagnosed. All of a sudden, you know, it's just all over the place, and that kind of disorients you, much like the characters would be in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I actually liked about them, kind of the way they jumped around a bit, was they did a bit of a bait and switch in our friends, where they make you think Matt is having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up certain scenes, like where they'll jump back and forth, and they'll set up certain scenes where it's almost making that point stronger that it's him. And there's like at least three different scenes where they're strengthening the thought that it's him. And it winds up, you know, it's not, you know, it winds up being her. But I think that them doing that kind of jumping around time type of trope, I think it worked really well for stuff like that. And yeah, I really like the comparison to Eternal Sunshine. I never would have thought to go there. I think that's really cool.
It's such a great movie, and such a such an interesting way to tell a story, especially a story like this, where, you know, beginning to end, I don't know that it would have the same impact. So, I'm glad they did it this way.
Yeah.
So what do you got next?
All right. My next one, it's a bit on the nose for part. It specifically deals with just one part of the movie, but it was a part that I really enjoyed. And this is the one movie that really stuck out, and it's The Bucket List.
Okay.
Because that becomes a big part in the center of the film, is where she wants to, you know, she wants to fulfill her own bucket list. She has a whole bunch of things that she wants to do. Like, she wants to dye her hair blue. She wants to be the Grand Marshal of Mardi Gras. She wants to write letters to her daughters for all the major moments in their lives that she won't be there. And I don't know, as I'm watching the scene, I was glued to the TV as I was watching it. I don't know what it was about it. It's such a simple scene, you know, or set of scenes, but I feel like it really showcased what it means to kind of have these friendships that help you along in this path. You know, they help you to do these things that you've always wanted to do when you probably wouldn't do them on your own. The Bucket List, again, another movie that I just recently watched, probably 6 months ago, for the first time. And it was one of the first ones that popped in my head for it, because I was thinking about that scene a lot. So
one of the first movies I think I ever reviewed.
Really?
For the school paper back in the day. But I haven't seen it since back then, but I definitely thought of it, though. I mean, I'm sure that phrase existed for decades before, but that's when I first heard of it.
So, yeah.
I mean, of course that movie comes to mind when somebody brings up a bucket list.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I will go my next piece. And this is one that comes up a lot whenever dealing with dying people, though usually it's teenage dying people. And that's Me and Earl and the Dying Girl from 2015, which I think in some ways it's almost become like shorthand for the terminally ill teenager trope in movies, you know, but it's also, I think, the best version of that story. And along with it being such a good movie, it's also the central story being about the main relationship as well as a friend. And it's like these three people navigating death and dealing with this experience, I think makes it a really good, you know, almost like a double feature with this movie, like two movies about three people trying to navigate this experience.
Yeah, this is one I haven't seen yet, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. And the way you kind of talked about it, I don't know if I could handle doing a double feature with this.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this one wrecked me enough at the end, so I don't know if I can handle that, but I definitely one that I've wanted to check out, just haven't gotten a chance to.
Well, if you ever get something stuck in your eye and you need to get the tears moving, maybe it's a good way to get that going.
Yeah, fair enough.
So what do you got for your next piece?
All right, this is so my last one is The Big Sick. I love Kumail Nanjiani, and I remember seeing this in the theater when it first came out, and I fell in love with it. I absolutely loved it, and I picked this one because it kind of spoke to me about, you know, being there for someone even when it's not easy, you know. And we see that in our friend, you know, when Nicole kind of starts to take a turn and the anger starts to come out, which, you know, he was warned, you know, could happen.
Sure.
You know, and she just starts kind of flipping out on him, and it's that, obviously that's not the same thing that happens in The Big Sick, but it's that whole concept of just, like I said, being there even when it's not the easiest thing to do. Sure. And The Big Sick, I mean, that the whole movie is about that. You know, he's in this position where he didn't have to be there. He could have left at any point, but he chose to stay and deal with, like, her parents who didn't like him at first. And even though it was not easy, he stuck around. And I really enjoyed that movie, and thought it fit really well as a puzzle piece for this.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that movie. And I don't know if you've, you know, had to deal with this kind of situation. I mean, I certainly haven't, but I mean, I got to imagine it's just, you know, the most difficult thing in the world. And they certainly, they certainly portray that within the movie. And it sounds like I was saying earlier, it sounds like in the book, it's just even more just awful. You know,
I have dealt with this. My dad died of cancer last February, actually, almost a year.
I'm sorry.
Ago. And toward the end, yeah, he would get irate and things like that. And it got not great at the end, but so, like, watching these films, it really spoke to me because I've seen this. So, like, I knew that how accurate that kind of thing was. And it can be hard, but, you know, you do what you do for the people that you love. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I've got two more. Actually, it's technically three more, but two of them go together. So the first one is a movie I didn't very much like, and it kind of speaks to the parts of the movie that I didn't like so much. That's a movie called My Sister's Keeper from 2009 with Cameron Diaz and Abigail Breslin, which I think is, like, you know, talk about manipulative. I mean, that's like a movie where it's like, it gets to as sad as can possibly be and then just keeps getting sadder from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think this movie has a tendency to lean in that direction as well, which is part of what, you know, is a little troublesome about the film. But because of the great performances from these three leads, it definitely kind of saves it from really going completely My Sister's Keeper, you know, because they're all just so damn good.
I also think that the time jump thing that you were talking about before helps that too.
Sure.
Because it's not just this constant building of sadness. You know, you get sadness and then it jumps back and you get something, you know, funny or heartfelt, and then it goes back into it. So I think that helped to keep it from going that direction as well.
Definitely. Definitely. And then just really quickly, I'll add on these two last pieces, which are both Paul Rudd movies. So three Paul Rudd movies in this list. First of all is 2011's Our Idiot Brother, about these three sisters who have this idiot brother who is just like this just sweet, just really well-meaning, well-intentioned guy who's just kind of a goof, you know, and just kind of everything that goes on within the family and with dealing with him. And Jason Segel's character is kind of a goof, you know, in this movie. And that is obviously really helps for, you know, for the family to have someone like that around. So so I thought of that. And then also another movie that Paul Rudd's got a much smaller part in, though, it's called The Baxter. It's from 2005. Not a lot of people saw it. It's directed by Michael Showalter from Wet Hot American Summer and The State and all that. And it's basically almost like a spoof of romantic comedies in a way, but it's a romantic comedy about the guy who gets left at the altar for, for the lead in most romantic comedies.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's kind of just a twist on that whole thing. And so the idea that this movie, Our Friend, I mean, we've got this big dramatic story about this family going through this thing, but it's really about the other guy, the sweet kind of, you know, silly friend who is there to help them along. You know, it's definitely not an exact one-to-one of what's going on here, but just the fact that the movie is really about that other person, that is kind of the heart of the film, is what made me think of the Baxter. And also just so I could get in another Paul Rudd movie. So
I mean, I'd never heard of it, but now I'm intrigued and want to seek it out and check that one out. I love Paul Rudd, so I'll definitely check that out.
Is the best.
Yeah.
Is the best. So I will go through our list here of all the movies we just talked about, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts. But our finished puzzle includes 50-50, I Love You Man, The Upside, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, The Bucket List, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, The Big Sick, My Sister's Keeper, Our Idiot Brother, and The Baxter. So obviously a lot of Paul Rudd, but also a lot of movies that you know, deal with, obviously, the central thing here. There is a person dying, and it is a very heavy thing, but then we have these really sweet relationships that kind of help the characters through and help us through at the same time, because it's such a heavy movie otherwise. But did you have any other, like, thoughts about this that we didn't quite get to while talking about the puzzle pieces?
I mean, I think... for me, you kind of touched on some of what I, you know, a lot of my thoughts about this one, but I think the central, you know, that yes, the central theme is, you know, friendship and in this, you know, dealing with death and things like that. But I think looking at not just, you know, death and friendship, but the amount of sacrifice that happens in this movie was something that really stuck out to me a lot, with, you know, the way that Dane just uproots his whole life. You know, now maybe he didn't think that he had much of a life to start with, because, you know, we get a scene where he's about to essentially kill himself. That's what he's right. He goes out into the desert, essentially, which I thought was a really cool scene. We got to see Gwendolyn Christie in this movie. Sure. I thought that was great. But stuff like that, you don't see a lot in these kind of movies. Like, that's the side you don't actually see. Like, all the movies that I mentioned, you don't get a side like that. And I that's something that I really liked about this, that they chose to go over. And it wasn't the person who's sick. A lot of times when they do show stuff like that, it tends to be the person who is sick that has those thoughts. And it's not. It's the friend, you know? It's the guy who just doesn't have anything going on, and now other stuff is going bad in his life. And I don't know, I thought that was a really interesting, and I thought that Jason Segel did a really fantastic job, not just in the role, but specifically in that sequence.
Yeah, he's kind of perfect for this character, because, you know, he's like you said, he doesn't really have anything going on before he takes on this role within this family. But he's not like he's not forcing himself in there either. He's not like he's just a nice guy. He just seems like a really nice guy, and he likes these people, and he wants to take on this sacrifice, you know, and really help out. It's an interesting thing. And my other thought that I wanted to bring up, and this is a very, maybe a strange thing. I don't know if it's a criticism or what it is exactly. I'm not sure how old you are, Josh. I'm 40.
I'm 36.
Okay, so just a little below me. But this movie, there's something interesting about these three main characters to me that you usually deal with a lot of movies about, like, you know, people dealing with these kinds of issues. You either get older people, or you get, like, it's the teenager death movie, the tearjerker teenager movie, you know? But these people being my age, I felt so, I'm trying to think of the best way to put this, but I could picture them, if they weren't going through this, they'd be on film Twitter arguing about Star Wars or something. Like they felt like kids, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about that. And yes, I'm calling myself a kid as well, a 40-year-old kid. But there's something about that I just found weird, but not in a bad way. Just interesting and odd, and something I hadn't really seen on screen before. Where the main characters are these almost like people out of a Kevin Smith movie or something like that, where they're not quite grown up, you know what I mean? And but they're dealing with this majorly grown up life thing, and I just think it's an interesting twist on that.
Yeah, I agree. When I realized that these characters were my age, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, obviously, I know that, you know, like Jason Segel and Casey have like are older, but like I didn't realize that Nicole is literally in the movie 36 when she dies.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you know, that kind of hit me. Because usually, like you said, it's old people. Like, I mean, I have the bucket list on here and that's old people. And you talked about me, Earl and Dinger, and that's, aren't they young kids?
You know, they're teenagers. Younger? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and a lot of times it's that that's what you get from it. So it is nice to see these somewhat essentially, you know, technically adults, but who may not be living the movie adult lifestyle,
right?
You know, what is portrayed in films as being an adult. It's a bit more realistic in that way, I thought. And I like that quite a bit about it.
Didn't 36 and 40-year-olds look so old when we were kids?
Yeah, like, definitely.
It's so weird. So strange.
It's like, I'll never be like that. No. Yeah, I am.
Well, I think that about does it for Out Friend. Josh, did you see anything else recently that you'd like to recommend for our listeners?
I mean, I just got done with All of Sundance. So there's a lot of stuff out there.
Did you have a specific favorite or something?
Yeah, my favorite is a film called Coda.
Okay.
It is about a this girl who is the only hearing child of a deaf family. And it's about, she discovers a passion for singing. And so she has this struggle inside of herself about whether to kind of pursue that passion or remain, kind of tied to her family obligations. And it was fantastic. Apparently Apple bought it for like $25 million. So it'll be getting a release sometime. I'm assuming it'll get released probably in the fall for Oscar bait, because that's how good it is. But yeah, if you get a chance, check that out. And also, I know this movie comes out, I think February 12th on HBO Max. It's Judas and the Black Messiah.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
It's
I haven't gotten a chance yet.
It is fantastic. So definitely a good chance. Check that out.
Awesome. Well, this was great, Josh. Why don't you tell people again where they can find your work and your website and all that?
All right. You can find me on Twitter at MovieBlogMerc. That's MovieBlog and then MERC. You can check out my reviews at MercWithAMovieBlog.com. And it's at MovieBlogMerc, like I said, on Twitter and Instagram. So you can check me out any of those.
Awesome. Well, Josh, thank you so much for being here, and maybe we'll get you back one of these days.
Yeah, it'd be an honor.
Looking for a new podcast? Check out the Infectious Groove Podcast. My name is Russ, and I host the show along with Michelle and Kyle. Every Monday, the three of us bring you music news and tell you our jammy jam, so you'll always have new music to check out. The Infectious Groove Podcast discusses music from nearly every decade and genre while openly displaying our passion for music you need to hear. On top of that, we have a thought-provoking main topic of discussion every week to get you thinking, discussing, and sharing music. We also include interviews with the music stars of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all major podcast platforms. Subscribe and listen to the Infectious Groove Podcast on your favorite podcast platform today.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Our Friend. Thank you to Josh from Merc with a Movie Blog for joining me for that one. Great conversation. I always love getting new guests on the show, getting new voices on here. So everybody that's listening, if you are thinking, hey, I'd like to talk puzzle pieces about an upcoming movie, you should get in touch with me, because let me tell you, there are a lot of movies coming out, and I don't know how I'm going to cover them all, but I'm going to try to cover as many as I can. So that does it for today. I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And you can rate and review us if you really enjoy what you're hearing. You can rate and review us if you don't like what you're hearing, too. But I prefer you do it if you like what you're hearing. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser to do the rating and the reviewing. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And don't forget, we also have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I combine content from Piecing It Together, as well as Awesome Movie Year, another great movie podcast that I produce, and all the other stuff I'm involved with, as well as my music career. So lots of content on that Produced by David Rosen Patreon. So check it out. The more subscribers we get, the more stuff we're going to make for it. So that would be awesome. If you really like the show, maybe check that out. So let's play you guys out with a piece of music like I always do. And our friend, like we've talked about through this whole conversation, very heavy movie, very, very dramatic, very sad. So you guys remember that last year I released a soundtrack album called Beater, the original motion picture soundtrack, which included the score to a feature film called Beater, which, by the way, I'm currently working on the score for another film from the same director, Chris Johnson. It's called Jacqueline, and hopefully you'll get to hear some of that music soon. But after the film Beater, after all the music from Beater on the album, I then put all of the music from a bunch of short films I worked on with Chris Johnson as well, because we've worked on a lot of projects together. And one of those films is a very, very sad movie called The Service of Others. And so I figured I'd play a piece from that film because it fits very well with everything going on here. So this is the track, it's kind of the title track from the film that plays over the end credits, called The Service of Others Reprise. And yeah, it's a very sad movie, very heavy movie. And I think this music, I think it helps sell the themes of the film, and hopefully will fit here with this film, Our Friends. So this is The Service of Others Reprise. It is on the Beater original motion picture soundtrack album that I released last year, which is available on iTunes and Spotify and all those places. So if you like this, go check out the rest of the album, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
An All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.